Well, I'm very pleased to welcome to Fremantle Shipping News, Gerard O'Brien. Welcome, Gerard.
Yeah, well, thanks, Michael.
You're probably well known as Gerard O'Brien, but you're probably better known by Silverleaf around correct. Fremantle.
Mm, that's it, which is the company name that we use for property. Yes, that's correct. So
it's a lovely name, I have to say. It's got softness and sharpness and strength and beauty all about it. Where did it come from?
Nothing other than just a company name that we chose amongst a series of names that were available back in the days. You actually, companies were already set up for you. Instead of today, you'd obviously do it very quickly by just choosing a name, but that's where it came from. Yeah.
You'd contact your lawyer and say, they've got a company, and they say, I've got seven here, which name do you like?
That's exactly right.
And it didn't become Gerard O'Brien Limited or something.
No, I would never do that. No, that's right. I don't think you need to personalise it. We're only custodians of property, so I think it's better off in a just in a name that's separate and stays separate. And yeah,
A range of people know Silverleaf probably better than others, and some people will be surprised in a way to realise just where Silverleaf are around Fremantle, around the port city. Can you just enumerate, if you can remember, the approximate order that they came in and you developed them?
Yeah, so probably about 25 years ago we bought the Target Centre. We're very close to a lot of, did a lot with Target in those days. This is well pre being ownership by Wesfarmers. So the centre came up for sale. We could see that it was trading pretty well, and we purchased the Target building. And that was our initial investment in Fremantle, as I say, 25 years ago. And then from there, once we had a hold in Fremantle, we had an interest in it, so we kept an eye on what was happening. And we bought across the road at 21 Adelaide Street, which was, and we put a bank in there, Bendigo Bank, and then St. George Bank, and now that's used as a cleaning business and a Jackson's. And over the years, then we eventually acquired the Woolstores building from EG Funds Management. We bought that with EG. We're looking to make it into a major apartment building to sell it off. And we looked at it as a shopping centre, and then eventually have now leased that to Coles as a redevelopment site with a Dina with 141 rooms above it. And then in the middle of the property, we will be building 245 build-to-rent residential apartments. And there'll be a little bit of land. It's about a 16,000 square metre site, so it's a large site in Fremantle.
We'll come back to that. It's a really important site, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And then we've acquired the Atwell building from the Atwell family.
An old Fremantle family?
A very old Fremantle family. That was where Paloo's were and Cully's. So we redeveloped that about 5 years ago and kept the two heritage buildings, the one on the Cantonment Street and the one facing High Street. And then we built in between the heritage buildings a four-level office building, which has been fully leased to Maritime Services in essence.
Various businesses that have that maritime theme.
Yeah, AMSA, Australian Maritime Safety Authority, which is the approving authority, took the top level, and then from there we had all the other building or other businesses came underneath that, with Costco and Swire and all the rest of it, all pretty well, and then a lot of the training, Wellingford's.
Big shipping companies and agents, those. Yeah.
Mm. So that's been very, very good and worked well, but a very unique building, beautiful space, a lot of light.
It's lovely to walk through there, not just through the old arcade, the Cully's and so on, but upstairs. It's fascinating how it's all been interconnected.
And we brought that back. There was an 1895 building, so we tuck-pointed all the both sides of the facade and brought it back to how it was originally.
What came after that development?
We then went down and bought the cinema. So we bought Hoyt's, which is down in Collie Street, and we put in there the we've got Canton Bay opening, and then we've got Varsity, and we've got a tie, and then we've got the cinema up the top. That only had a very short lease, so we actually reduced the lease rental dramatically, and signed them back up for over 20 years. So,
wow. Yeah, 20 years of pictures to come.
20 years of pictures to come, but that's been one industry that's been very hardly hit with COVID.
Yes.
So, but that's working well. Then we went down and did 96 High Street, where we've got next to National Hotel, where we've put in, originally we put in a group called a Lapa, and that was a Brazilian steakhouse. And they ran that for about 6 years, and then they decided not to stay there. And we've just got Palace Arcade opening there in about 2 months' time.
That's right, next to the building that used to be the banks, lately been the police station, and the police station about to go. I wonder what'll happen next door.
Yeah, so the NAB. Yeah, so that'll be an interesting one. And then we acquired the Manning Buildings. And we've been slowly doing
that. Just remind people just where the Manning Buildings are.
So the Manning Buildings runs between, it's six buildings all brought together by, we bought off Tony Manning, but Lucius Manning was the original pioneer of the family, and he was there for some, they've owned it, the Manning family have owned this for 137 years. So it's
amazing story.
Four generations there. So a lot of owners in the end, and they decided that they couldn't keep going with it. But so it runs from William Street, where it's the smallest one there, and we've redone that and got back on all the original facade, brought it back, taken all the paint off it, and then we put all the tuck pointing back to how it was, we put all the verandas back to how they were, and then we wrapped around all along High Street.
Because as you've described it, the Manning Buildings with their various conglomerations may be said, on one view, to start opposite the Town Hall on William Street.
That's correct.
Walk around down the High Street Mall.
That's correct.
Turn left up towards the Cappuccino Strip, and you
eventually
get up to the Newport Way.
That's right. So down Market Street onto South Terrace.
Yes.
Yeah, so and then we include the Newport, which is, we bought that. And we hopefully will tidy that up. In the next 1 to 2 years, we've got a chap that's in there who's quite keen to upgrade the Newport, and we're working with him on his concepts and getting that done at the moment. And then we bought the old, what we call the old police station, but it was originally the courthouse and the cells.
This is on Henderson Street, I think.
On Henderson Street, 45 Henderson Street, and then the Waters Cottages, Waters 2 it was, next door to it. And we are in the process of doing it. It's a very much heritage listed, challenging building in the sense that we've just got to get it right. It's just not an easy one. We've taken all the roofs off and replaced those with new tin. We've removed all the asbestos. We've improved the property and we got a DA. So we've started on it, but we're only very early days in the DA. So we're slowly working through that. We will lease out the old courthouse itself as a will become a tavern and a restaurant. And
well, that'll more or less continue an old use of a courthouse. Always get the impression judges and magistrates pulled a bottle like out from underneath the bench.
Probably did. And then the Waters Cottages, we're going to cut them up into 12 units for Patrick Prendeville to use as his accommodation. But the big bulky part of it, which the Gus Ferguson building, which is a four-level concrete block in between it, and all the old cells are yet to happen, and that will be the big part that we will need.
When were
to
they?
Make sure
when were
we
they built
right.
roughly, Jerry?
Look,
various stages, I imagine.
But most of it, I would say, is around 1870, just by little bits and pieces. Obviously, it's interesting, the Gus Ferguson building, which probably would have been built in the 1980s. And it sits in between, and that yet they're claiming that as heritage as well, which is unusual because it's Gus Ferguson built Curtin University, the same type of structure, very strong, sturdy, and he's got all the concrete, which was done with wood as a support, so you get all the colour of the wood in through.
You get all the finish.
The finish of the wood. So that's another pretty big challenge for us, but we'll do that.
Come back and talk about heritage challenges in a moment, but what else have you got going?
So we then did 28 Adelaide Street, where we've just got a building there which we've just put in for a DA. It's been in for about 4 months, but we've had a few issues with just changing a couple, three steps at the end of a stairway, which has held it up for 4 months while it goes through council.
A mere observation, not a complaint.
No, an observation. I think it's easier to just be an observation, not complain. But that's where we're at with that. So that there, that wraps up what we're doing, Fremantle.
Let's come back to some of those things. But at a personal level, how did you get into this fascinating business, particularly in Fremantle, when I think your background probably was a long way from heritage buildings in Fremantle?
Yeah, it's true. Well, look, by background, I did a degree in ag science. My passion in life is agriculture, and it still is. And my father was a clothing drapery owner in Manning, and my brother's still got that drapery today, so which is great. So when I finished ag science, I joined a bank, so I went into ag in the bank, and then I became a valuer because they wanted everybody that was in the country to become a licensed valuer, so I became a valuer. Then I moved into their corporate finance division. So my background therefore was very influenced by agricultural valuation, property, finance. So remarkably, they'd all seem to sort of fit together, and we bought a shopping centre at 25, which was the Kingsley Village Shopping Centre, and borrowed 110% with NatWest Finance and Anglican Church Finance, and away we went. And so we just stayed with it for many years and went farming and went from there.
So having got your, I take it, foot, if not the little toe, into the water with that Kingsley development, you presumably could start to see what other prospects in commercial development.
Yeah, well, we got very, very, close to all the retailers and got to know them. And a lot of it is just repeat. There's not a lot of science to it. It's just a matter of just doing it carefully and repeating it. So, and once you get to, work with retailers and realise they're your boss and they're on the pedestal and you're looking up to them, it's pretty easy. Once you lose, you don't think they're your customer, you very quickly go bad in this game. But whilst you treat every tenant as a very important customer, it seems to work pretty well.
Well, the world does well to revolve around the notion of respect, I suspect.
Yeah, everywhere. That's exactly right. Absolutely respect. Yeah.
Does Fremantle, when you look back on it over these last 25 years since the Target Building acquisition, does it present particular challenges, or does it have a different character, or is it the same basic thesis that you just outlined?
Look, I guess the biggest problem with Fremantle is I think the perception from a lot of people is it's rare earth and it's so sacred, and I don't know whether the retailers think the same, and they've gone from being retailers in Fremantle to retailers at Garden City and Coburn Central and everywhere else. So retail in Fremantle has suffered at our own peril, because the land is expensive for what you can do with it and the lack of people. If you look at Fremantle in 1918, there was 30,000 people here.
We're talking pretty much the CBD.
Yeah, that's right. So 100 years later, we've still got 30,000 people. So we have not improved at all. So we went from having 30% of the population down to having 1.2% of the population today. And if you look at places like Armidale, they would have had, a cat and a dog and one or two people. And today they've got over 100,000 people in the same shire. So we've let by creating this sort of special presence, we've lost a lot of the ability to attract more people. And as we don't attract more people, we've actually, retail suffered as a result. And then of course, a lot of very, very good developers have built, Claremont Quarter, Coburn, Garden City, and they've all just pulled out. And we've got a prickle factor still in Fremantle that we don't realise how much it hurts, and that is parking fees. If you go to any of the other adjoining areas, there's no parking fee. So we've got something that is a deterrent that we need to address in time.
Well, if you were the emperor for a day, although you might need a week, Jared, what would be the principal things you would like to do or see happen within a short period of time to effect your vision for Fremantle?
Look, I don't think it's got to be, there's a lot of different, and the beauty of Fremantle, it's so eclectic. There's, there's artists, there's, unemployed, there's professors, there's university lecturers, and there's just such an eclectic group of people. So to take
a... Is eclectic a sort of a different word from troublesome?
No. It's just you know, unique and eclectic. But in some ways, Fremantle does operate a little bit like a, you know, I'm a country sort of town person. And it operates to some degree similar to that in the sense that you've got a lot of warmth and a lot of friendships and a lot of, you know, everyone knows each other and says g'day to each other and all the rest of it. And that's special in Fremantle. You don't get that in the CBD of Perth. You know, there's very much stuck to their own areas with, you know, businesses and suits and ties and all the rest of it. So Fremantle is probably more relaxed and outgoing. But what would I do? I don't know whether you can, you know, every time you change one thing, there's a reaction and changes lots of others. You know, there's no doubt I'd like to see the retail better. But you've got to make sure you do that in line with demand and the type of people you've got. You know, you've got to make sure that, you know, what do our customers want in Fremantle? And it's very, very different from a lot of other areas. We're very careful to look at the data from credit cards, and we get quantum data and look at where they spend their money and then do it. But the few businesses that work very well here is, you know, we put in a new chocolate shop in and we brought them over from Tasmania that works very well. You look at the markets and they work very well. Now the Fremantle markets is probably the only market really, you know, in Western Australia that has worked to that strong degree. But because people use Fremantle as a day out and it's a place that you can go to and wander around and all the rest of it. So I just think we need to be more open and more progressive with things that we do and do them faster. I think that, you know, everybody at every level in Fremantle means well, but it's just so bogged down. It's a bit like draconian system, and it takes a long time to get anything done. And I noticed the debate on the, you know, when they put in the skate park, and there was a lot of people against it. And I've gone there many times with my grandchildren, and it's just such a wonderful outcome.
Isn't it brilliant?
Yeah. So, you know, just the criticism. You look at Little Creatures, and it's just a wonderful outlet. It's really good for every age of child. So you can have children, you can have, you know, young families, you can have grandmas all mixing together in a very nice area, you know, with a pizza and a pint of beer and a bit of fun on a concrete floor. So that's Freo. So you've got to be very careful what you wish for. And I don't know whether I'd wholesale change Fremantle. I would just get decisions made faster, quicker. I would make sure they research them, but then get on with it. Believe in what your decisions are and make it happen. I just think it's...
What
just
are the,
takes too long.
What are the apparent obstacles? Are there any obvious ones that you could snip or remove? Or?
Yeah, look, employment's the key to everything. And, you know, sure, we've now brought in Department of Communities, but we need more than that. We need jobs here. And to do that, you need probably, you know, and, you know, if you go into South Perth, you see what's happened, and, you know, not everyone agrees with it, but because you've got some height there, you've immediately created jobs and people, and from that comes cafes and restaurants, and it just all self-generates it. But Fremantle should be seriously aiming to get an additional 20,000 people and not take away the beauty of Fremantle, but get it to a stage where we've that extra 20,000 people will create, fill up all these old buildings. There's a lot of vacant space. You know, we've got about 40,000 square metres of vacant space, particularly in the west end, of office space.
So, and we're talking about the upstairs of many of the downstairs tenancies, aren't we?
That's correct.
And you do what? You may need to relax or alter some of the fire and other building laws, I suppose, to ensure...
Not so much fire, but get them used again. Get people back down in here, use it for residential, or use it for whatever we need to, but get people to
What's stopping something like that happening, do you think?
Look, it's been hard because of the, you know, as soon as a lot of these spaces isn't rated because they've removed the power from the area, so it's not rentable, it's not leasable space, because the outgoings are probably, most statutory costs, government costs now are over 40% of your total cost. So the total rent bill that goes to a tenant, 40%'s statutory cost, and 60% is for the return. So a lot of people, when they can't rent that space for a number that makes it work, or it's more than those rates, they just don't do it. So it just sits vacant. So I think we've got to turn and say, if we want this heritage space occupied, it's really all got to come down to a situation where we create the overheads, the cost of it, to be in line with the community value of retaining the heritage. And that may mean that, you know, all your water rates, shire rates and land tax on this place is rated at 25% of when you, as opposed to what you'd pay on a normal commercial building. So there's lots of innovative things we can do.
They require, I take it, conversations with not only Fremantle Council, but state government.
Yes, possibly. State government for land tax, for sure.
Yes.
Council for rates. But yes, and that conversations that need to be had. If these are assets that should be preserved and should be used by the community, but what happens now is they just get, the power gets taken off, they can't get rated, and they just get
empty.
Left. And they sit empty and full of pigeons and just get destroyed. So a lot of the value gets destroyed.
Let's just turn to a topic you mentioned earlier, in passing, parking. Not so long ago, I interviewed all of the members of the Fremantle Council about their jobs and the way they saw things, and it's pretty plain, particularly during COVID, that a lot of the council's revenue comes from parking. So to turn the tap off, or to turn it down to a trickle, obviously would have some financial implications for the council. What would you imagine there? Is there more parking space needed? Do you want to reduce the cost of it? Questions of public transport, like rail and the like. Do you have a position around all that?
Yeah, look, I think it's interesting. The council revenue is about $70 million a year, and parking revenue might be, say, $5 million a year. And there's lots of ways you could get $5 million out of the council budget. And it's just something I don't want to comment on, but there'd be a lot of ways you could do that and then not have any parking revenue, and that's gross revenue, not net.
Assuming no revenue problem, looking just at parking as parking, do you think there ought to be more of it? Do we need stories of parking space? What's the answer?
Look, there's obviously, you know, there is a high level, Queensgate Centre is a multi-level car park, and there's about another 5,000 parking bays on grade which council run, and we've probably got 400 or 500 bays in town. Look, I just think it's you can't compete in retail when you've got Claremont Quarter giving 3 hours free, you've got Coburn giving all day free, you've got Garden City giving, you know, all day free, and then say, well, come down to Fremantle and shop here and we'll charge you from, you know, the moment you arrive. It's, we're all trying to compete for this same consumer to come and enjoy some time here. And, you know, we just jump across to Hobart, it's probably the easiest. They've got 27% of their total retail sales happens in their CBD. Perth, Sydney, Melbourne, it's 2%. Now, what is the difference? The difference is the cost of parking. In Hobart, the first 90 minutes is free, costs you nothing. And then it's 60 cents an hour. And the reason for that is the council subsidises the car parking in Hobart. They lease all the car parks, private enterprise builds them, they then lease them, and they want the city to be vibrant. And it has been, it's an extremely vibrant city. So there's lots of options, there's lots of models out there. You don't need to reinvent the wheel. You just need to ask, look, and listen, and then say we're doing it. But has the parking have a major impact over the years? The parking, and probably the homeless that you mentioned, Michael, which the homeless isn't a problem in itself. It's the security that people feel when they get yelled at by someone that's been drinking or on drugs, and that's another issue that we need to do. Now, they're all wonderful people and they do need care and they do need some help, but we do also need to somehow allow that not to disturb young children hearing swear words and all the rest of it. So,
well, just the general antisocial behaviour. Coming back to another topic, you mentioned in the old days, particularly if you go back 100 years from now, I mean, Fremantle was town to a lot of people who lived around Fremantle. They weren't, when they went to town talking about going to Hay Street in Perth, they were coming down to Palouse, or they were coming down to the movies here or whatever. Once upon a time, not that long ago, Myers had a presence on King Square, and the building's been repurposed. But is there any future for that sort of redevelopment, or has the size of Perth and its scope and the growth of regional shopping centres meant that you no longer can aspire to have that sort of presence in a smaller place like Freo?
Yeah, look, I think all the department stores, Target, Woolworths, Big W, Kmart, that whole space is challenged. And even the department stores like Myer and David Jones is challenged. And I guess it's the fact that there's service and online and all the rest that's sort of taken. So I don't see Fremantle will ever get that type of back. I don't see that Fremantle could ever support the H&M or anything like that. So Fremantle's got to be smaller, more interesting, eclectic stores, and try not to be the run-of-the-mill. I think most people that come to Fremantle come here for something different. They don't, you know, they don't wanting to go to a Garden City shopping centre now. So we've got to have some mainstream, and the mainstream is the ones that will, you know, make sure you've got a Coles and various things like that. But I would like to see a ratio, and the ratio is debatable, but probably 50-50. 50% of eclectic stores that are, and we've tried to do that in Manning. If you go through Manning, you'll see, you'll see a store where we've got all the motorbike products and beautiful leather bags and canvas bags. And then directly opposite, we've got an Aboriginal scarf store where they make all Aboriginals make products that are very much clothing products that are all made by them. Then we've got the Shearing Shed, which is a trendy, different hairdresser, and you've got, you know, Grumpy Sailor, which is a cafe. So you've got, and we're just doing Spice Market, but you've got lots of little wine bars we're opening and things like that. So we've created a bit of, and even if you look at our Dangerfield, why do Dangerfield work? Well, if you look at it, it's a bright coloured, eclectic like type of clothing, and they'll trade very well, because I think most of the people that live in Fremantle really were originally sort of Margaret River type people. They're sort of, you know, fun loving hippie type people that, you know, grew up and got a job and become a lawyer, but they still like to go to shops that are a little bit different from mainstream. They think a little bit differently, they're a little bit more out there. And so we try desperately to make sure the stores that we provide are those different type of stores that they can go and have a, you know, a drink and go and get some nice produce that they can't get elsewhere easily. And that's why the markets work well. You know, it's just that difference, a bit of entertainment.
People love the markets, don't they?
And that's why it works.
To what extent then can councils, probably more generally speaking, but in Fremantle, try and plan through their schemes, their local plans, whatever, for what they'd like Fremantle to be versus what a developer like you foresees, driven by the data that you were mentioning earlier? I mean, is it a hand-in-glove arrangement between the regulators and the city fathers in that sense, and mothers and girls and boys and you?
Yeah, look, I think it's a point in time. I think everyone thinks that developers and all these things are always going to be there, and they'd come and go. Look, 20 years ago, Alcoa wanted to stay in Fremantle when they wanted to build on what we call the Yoon Holding site that's directly opposite this in Cantonment Street. And, you know, they tried to get a development up and running, and they just couldn't get it through council to the levels that they wanted to build, which was slightly over four levels. As a result of that, they left, and they took, you know, 1,000 jobs with them and went over to Garden City, and have been there for that 20 years, and now they're moving again, and we try to bring them back, but it's sort of too late. ING did the same thing. They tried to build on a property on the, you know, Victoria Keys there, and that went on for years and years and years, but still couldn't get an approval. And then obviously 07-08 GFC sort of hit, and then they left. And we've struggled big time trying to get the development up on the wool stores, and we've worked on that for nearly 6 years. So it's that ability to be able to make decisions and get on with them and support them. And I noticed down the other day, down at Mandurah, we were doing some work down there. We're doing an office building, and the new young council there, and they've sort of got an attitude now that, you know, you only ever say, used to be no, 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 now it's yes in every case, unless it's legally not, you have to say no for something. So I think we've got to do that. I think we've got lots of competitors out there with other people that wanted to do developments and progress things. But it's the point in time, once you say no to it, it's very unlikely that someone else is going to turn up for another decade. And that's what sort of hurt us a bit. I understand the need for planning, and I understand the need to for us to make sure we slow down and get it right. But the consequences are much graver than quite often is realised when we get a decline, because it takes a lot of energy and cost, and therefore everybody gets shattered and then they don't do anything or don't come back for a long time. So I think we've just got to change that approach.
Jared, Silverleaf, as you outlined at the beginning, have a real interest in Fremantle, and it's developed, no doubt, according to commercial opportunities as they've come along. But you've grown, it's clear, to understand Fremantle pretty well. What will Fremantle look like in 10 years? What's the sort of Fremantle you've envisaged that all of these developments that you've been involved with have produced? Is it going to be a service town? Is it set up to be something else? If you can't bring an Alcoa and city officers back and another government department in, is there some other vision for Fremantle?
Look, Fremantle will burn, there is no doubt, but whether it's 1 year, 5 years or 20 years is really dependent on, you know, the people more than anything. But and the other thing that's really...
When you say the people, you mean large numbers coming to live here?
Yeah, well, people's attitude, people's approach, right. People wanting to do something. But it will happen, because you're sitting at the end of the western suburbs, you're 13 kilometres from Perth CBD, surrounded by water, in a harbour and in an ocean. And water, no matter what we say, is magnetic. It pulls people from... Everybody wants to sit and look at a bit of water or play in a bit of water down at Bathers Beach or whatever it is. But water is magnetic and it brings people. And Fremantle's got all that magnetism, and it's unique, and it's got a bit of heritage, and it's got a fun attitude. So, yeah, I think it's so. But what do I envisage it's going to look like in a decade? I still think it's going... I don't ever think now. I think retail is going to be in decline as we go more and more online throughout the whole of Australia.
As a general proposition. Yes.
I think offices are on decline purely because of, you know, again, Skype and Zoom meetings and all the rest of it. And so, you know, we've been having 12 square metres per head of population, but in an office, but that's going to come down dramatically as people work more and more from home, and therefore we won't need to come to the office as much. They'll still come to the office, but won't be every day. They might come work in the office 2 days a week and work from home, or their whatever, a few days a week. So I think our culture's changing. I think that's changing. So what do people absolutely need? And that is a bedroom and a bathroom. So I think residential will become more and more demand. And that's why we're building the 245 build to rent. And I see that as being where the future will be. The other thing that Fremantle's got is, if we lose the port, we're going to end up with a very large area of land, like 200 hectares of land.
Between the north side of the harbour and Leighton.
That's right, and that's going to be a big thing. And the other thing is, Victoria Keys is a very unique piece of land.
And that's the south side of
the
harbour.
That's the south side.
From where we're looking out your window, we can just about see it.
That's right. And that should be, that's better than just putting a residential or an office block or whatever on it. So
there have been various ideas, particularly so far, for the Victoria Key area, going back an administration or two of the state government. But what would you like to see happen?
I personally, and I know this is a bit controversial, but I personally would like to see the second casino there, because Fremantle is a entertainment hub. Now, whilst I don't in favour of gambling, I think it's one of those things that you could get 24-hour nightlife activity, bring in more people, and let it be seen and enjoyed by so many. Because anything else, if you build an office block, it gets locked out. Very few of the population will be able to walk along that harbour. Whereas if we do something like a casino and make it an entertainment hub, I think it would be just fantastic. Now, I know Colin Barnett was very, very enthusiastic about putting a redevelopment authority just into the Victoria Quays section, and I actually attended a breakfast where he asked the council to consider it. And I think that would have made, you know, opened up all those doors of planning and explosion zones and all the other things that made it much more complex. And I was involved with in Armidale with the Alana McTiernan when with the Redevelopment Authority, and it just was amazing the power of the Redevelopment Authority to get things done and make it happen.
Seen East Perth and Subiaco as well.
Absolutely tremendous, and I really think it would be a big plus to bring something like that, you know, very all those amazing minds and brains and visions that, you know, the planning people can have when you bring them together without putting the restrictions around them. So that's one idea.
On another topic, you've been here 25 years in Fremantle, you've got these developments and commercial activities happening, and your office is here as well. Are there opportunities for more businesses just to set up and enjoy the ease of getting to Fremantle, whether by car or train or bus or Uber, and enjoying the Fremantle life as
Absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely. And we, you know, the idea that, you know, Colin Barnett bringing out the Department of Communities and moving them here was a real positive for Fremantle. So let's just, but the more and more of it, the better. Absolutely, I fully agree with you. We should bring those type of businesses in.
And you sometimes hear, I mean, everybody wants Fremantle to have a dynamic business heart. And the usual debate is, well, we don't want this at the expense of losing heritage or changing the scale of the city too much or too much high rise or whatever it is. And you sometimes hear people throwing out various ideas for what might be congruent, fit with Fremantle's image and dynamic, like a film industry. Have you crossed that idea and thought about it?
Oh, look, it'd be fantastic. I just haven't seen the you know, and if you bring hubs, you bring, like, the Maritime is a hub in Fremantle, and it works because there's a need to be here for that, and that's what we need to do. We need to work out our natural strategic advantages and then work on those. And obviously, you know, we should have things like, you know, fishing down here and make a big hub of the fishing because we're on the seaport. We've got a natural strategic advantage. But I think that's what we need to do more of, and that would be, that's where this hub should start, and the hub then makes sense and it will grow.
Jared, I think we've got to the point where we have, unfortunately, to bring this lovely conversation to an end, but it's been fascinating listening to you and share your thoughts and visions about Fremantle, so thanks very much. But before we leave, I always ask everybody, what is it about Fremantle in the end that makes it such an interesting place?
I honestly think it is that eclectic group of people, the friendship. You know, you can walk down the road and, you know, you can even get to know the homeless fairly well, but they always say g'day to us, and, you know, and that's, you know, the professors, the Notre Dame, everybody's, you know, likes it. And it is a warm, but the ocean, the river, the vista, that sea breeze every afternoon. But it's definitely not paying for parking.
Thanks very much, Jared. Good luck with everything.